Welcome everyone to a Sunday afternoon session in Second Life. Today is going to be my last talk of the year. And I'd like to apologize for being a little bit preoccupied with my trip. I think on Wednesday I just kept talking and talking. It looks like today we have quite a few serious Buddhists here today, which fits perfectly with what I was hoping to do with this session. I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the basics of meditation, as I always like to do, and then I'd like to open the floor up to questions and maybe some dialogue. Because there are obviously people out here who practice different techniques. And maybe there's some new people who have questions. So, whereas normally I talk for a long time and then people are too tired to ask questions, I'm going to focus more on an interactive session here. Being my last session, I want to give people a chance to... I still like to sort of have control of the dialogues because it's, you know, I'm supposed to be the teacher here, so... I'll be using voice, and you're welcome to use voice as well, but more to ask questions and give me an idea of what you'd like to have me talk about, you'd like to hear talked about. Okay, so the first thing obviously for us to do is to settle down into a Buddhist frame of mind. And what is a Buddhist frame of mind? The Buddhist frame of mind is looking at things from an experiential point of view. So here we are, we have to remind ourselves of who we are, where we are, what we are, and where we're going. What we are, we're sitting in this chair looking at a computer screen. We have to remind ourselves about this, or else we get drawn in. We can even get drawn away by other things if we don't remind ourselves continuously and keep ourselves, it's like dancing. Always listening to the rhythm and always keeping up with it. So that's the first thing we should do when we start to, when we come together as a group like this, is to put ourselves in the right frame of mind. We should approach this meeting and this opportunity as a chance for us to develop ourselves and to learn a little bit more about what we have to do to develop ourselves, to clear our minds and to clean our minds, and to become free from suffering, to find peace and happiness. So the meditation that I teach is based on this concept of reminding yourself. We forget ourselves too often, and that's the essence of the practice, is to keep in tune with the essential nature of the experience in front of us. So right in front of you now, there's an experience going on. Whatever else there is in your life, whatever's in your past or in your future, the one thing we have in common is the present moment, our experience. And it's the one thing that runs throughout our whole lives. We're always experiencing something or another. The problem as we understand it is that we make more out of the experience than it is. We extrapolate upon the experience. And so our lives are much more than what we experience and are often based on things that we don't experience, wanting it to be some other way, wanting it not to be this way, always wishing and worrying and hoping and despairing. Because we want things to be one way and they're another way. Because we can't accept. Because we're not in tune with reality. So meditation is, in essence, reminding ourselves and tuning ourselves in to the reality of the experience. trying to tune out the illusions and the delusions and the judgments that we create about our experience. And we can talk philosophically about Buddhism, we can theorize, we can come up with all sorts of grand schemes of things, the way the universe works and so on. I can talk to you all about the theory of the Buddha's teaching and on and on. But the only teacher that is really going to give you the knowledge that you need is yourself, is your own mind. Truth is within. The true nature of reality is to be found by yourself. The best I can do is give you the best anyone can do is give you a roadmap, point you in the right direction. It's up to you to do the traveling. So what's most important right now, when you're coming here to learn something about Buddhism, is to teach yourself, is to apply yourself. Even here and now you can train yourself in this. What's happening in front of you? The word meditation is a very good word. It's not the word that we generally use in the East or in the ancient languages. Though we do have a word that means something similar, we don't use it as often as we should. Meditation means to consider, no? To analyze, to examine. And that's basically what we're going to do, because the clearer we see what's happening in front of us, the less likely we are to judge it, the less likely we are the less suffering we have in regards to it. Because our lives are less an extrapolation and more an experience. When we approach reality in terms of what it is, instead of in terms of how we'd like it, or how we expect it, or how we need it, then all of the suffering and all of the anger and frustration, all of the desires and the addictions melt away. We don't need anything. I gave a talk last night at a Sri Lankan monastery in near Los Angeles. And at the end of the talk, this little 7-year-old kid raised up his hand and said, and asked, "So when you clean your mind, this was like a 7-year-old. It was really, really interesting. I've never had someone that young hold up their hand and ask a question. He said, "When you clean your mind, when you become at peace with yourself, can you still play DS?" And the reason he asked is because I had been talking about these kids and their Nintendo DSs. I said, "What are you playing there?" He said, "It's a DS." I said, "Oh, DS. I don't know what a DS is. It's this little thing that they have." And it was a wonderful question. Everyone laughed. And I said to him, I said, "I'm not sure why you'd want to." I had to think about it for a second. I didn't know what he was asking at first, whether he was saying, "Do you want to? Or would you want to? Or would you be allowed to?" Or so I wasn't sure what the meaning was. He clarified it for me. I said, "I'm not sure why you'd want to. The reason why they're playing the DS in the first place is because they're not happy." I said, "You're not happy. You think you're doing it because you say you're doing it because it's fun. The truth is that you're not at peace with yourself right now. Sitting here listening to me is not happy for you. You're not happy. You're missing something. When we're truly happy with things as they are, we don't need anything. We don't have to go for anything. We don't have to chase after anything. We're always at peace." Sure, well, just let me get into this. I'm taking too much time, but I was just going to give a basic rundown of the meditation that I teach. And then I'll get into other things like metta meditation, which is very useful. But the basic point here is that the word meditation means to examine. And in that sense, there are a lot of things out there that we call meditation that aren't really in any way meditating. There are meditations that are just for the purpose of relaxing. But if you're not learning anything, if you're not gaining any clarity of mind, it's not really what I would call meditation. The meditation that we do is, as many of you know, the meditation that I teach is to examine, to try to focus our minds on whatever is in front of us so that we can clear up this misunderstanding that this is uncomfortable, that this is unacceptable when problems arise. We train ourselves to be in tune with things as they are and as they change. When things change, we're not thinking about something that passed away. We're looking at what is now, what's newly arisen. So look at yourself. What are you doing right now? What's happening? What's happening in your body? What's happening in your mind? You'll probably find that, first of all, that you weren't really aware of what's going on. You weren't aware what your hands were doing. You weren't aware what your feet were doing. You weren't aware what your body was doing. And you certainly weren't aware generally what your mind was doing, wandering here, wandering there. So in meditation, we're going to look at these things and we're going to shine a bright light in our minds so that we can see what we're doing to ourselves. We can see how we're creating suffering for ourselves. The method that we use is just this word, this mantra. And it's just a tool that focuses your mind on yourself, back in on itself. The first thing we focus on is the body because it's simple. We focus on the stomach rising and falling. When the stomach rises, we say to ourselves, rising. When the stomach falls, we say, falling. Just training ourselves, getting used to this idea of seeing things as they are. Rising, falling. Rising, falling. It seems like a very simple thing and perhaps even seems a bit useless. What's the point? But if you actually do it, you'll see that it has profound usefulness. It's something that allows us to see so many things about ourselves. We'll see all of our emotions. The fact that we think it's useful is a judgment, and it's a suffering. It's a displeasure of sorts. Probably sitting here listening to me is in many ways displeasing, even though you want to hear what I'm saying. After a while, your mind won't take it anymore. Your mind wants to go and check out Facebook or YouTube or what's going on here, what's going on there. Maybe you go to the washroom. And all we're doing in the meditation is looking a little bit closer so that we can refine our reactions to things. Instead of getting angry or upset at things, we can be with them and accept them and understand and see them for what they are. We can also see anger for what it is. When we do get upset and angry and frustrated and bored, we can see that that's not bringing us any, that's bringing us great suffering. We can see that when we cling to things, when we want things. I was talking to these children, when they're sitting there thinking about the only thing that brings them pleasure or the only thing that their mind can accept being this DS, when they're thinking about that, they're not happy. They're in a state of stress. They think it's pleasant. Oh, yes, I want that. What a wonderful thing it is. And they think this is good. Because there's this little taste of the happiness in their mind, the memory of how wonderful it is to beat up little aliens on a 3-inch computer screen. But it's actually a great amount of suffering and stress. We can see how even our wants, even the things that make us happy, that we claim make us happy, actually bring a great amount of stress to us. So we focus on all of these things and we practice to see them clearer. This is what it means, this is what meditation means. When we feel pain, we focus on the pain. When we want something, we focus on the wanting. As we see it clearer, we see those things, those attitudes, those behaviors of ours that are bringing us suffering, and we let go of them. All it takes is wisdom, all it takes is understanding. Okay, so this is how we should approach this meeting. That we should approach our meeting by looking at ourselves and starting from the inside. Don't start by looking at me and trying to think of, you know, how I can help you, or maybe even thinking about how you can refute what I'm saying or so on. Start with what's going on in your mind when I start talking, or even when you come here. What are you coming here with? What sort of baggage? Let's clear that out. And then when something comes up that we want to discuss, we'll discuss it. You're welcome to ask. Otherwise, we can all just, if you have nothing to ask, you can just sit there and meditate. And hopefully we'll have some tips for you to help you to continue to meditate. As far as the question about, feel free to interrupt me and ask questions and so on, but as far as Mojo's question about the difference between metta meditation and sitting meditation, let's make sure I've got that right. Difference between metta meditation and sitting meditation. Okay. Well, metta meditation is generally practiced sitting down. See, the thing that a lot of people don't realize about metta meditation is that at its best, it's a real form of tranquility meditation, meant not just to make you more loving, but actually to absorb the mind, to create a state of rapture, where by the end you are considering the whole universe with love. You're in a state of absorption, where you are totally absorbed in this state of love for all beings. Sounds pretty cool, no? It's a wonderful meditation. And that's the highest state. The same with compassion. Compassion isn't just feeling compassionate towards someone. That is compassion, but the highest state is eventually to be able to feel compassion for all beings in a moment, in your meditation. To be able to consider, have as your object all beings. That being said, the differences that I could find, because metta meditation can also be used in a general sense, which is maybe more what you're talking about, in terms of our daily lives, how we have love for people. And in that sense, it's a wish that arises in our mind. It's a maybe even a mantra that we have memorized. I have several that I use. You know, I have a script that I'll say when I think of someone. You know, may you be happy. May you be well. May you be free from suffering. May you find peace and bliss. A cleansing meditation versus other styles of meditation. Cleansing, you mean in terms of what I just explained, this you know, looking at reality, seeing it clear and so on. Well, in Buddhism, we separate meditation into two types. One that the ultimate goal is to calm the mind, and the other where the ultimate goal is to cleanse the mind, but more to see things clearly, to create wisdom. One creates concentration, the other creates wisdom, and that being the goal. It's undeniable that there are certain types of meditation that will not bring any appreciable amount of wisdom. All they do is focus the mind. Now, we might be in argument about which meditations fall into which category, but I think it's undeniable that certain ways of focusing the mind are not going to bring about profound insight, because it's focusing on a single object. If you focus on, say, a light or a color or a flame, all you're going to get out of that is a state of peace and calm. And you will gain a certain amount of wisdom. The Buddha said there is a wisdom that comes. It's the wisdom in regards to these states. You know, you can learn how to, say, in the beginning, you'll focus the mind on a plate of a circle of white, a white circle in your mind, maybe the size of a dinner plate. And then you can teach yourself how to expand it. For some of you, this might seem ridiculous or useless, but the point is that it's going to calm the mind. Once you can absorb your mind into a circle of white light, you can then expand it. to the size of the room, to the size of the monastery, to the size of the world, until you can expand it into infinity, where you don't see a limit to the white. Your whole universe is white. You're sitting in meditation with your eyes closed, and all you see is white. Now, obviously, I think it should be clear by this that you're not going to gain any wisdom from this. It's not going to teach you anything about your problems. All it's doing is focusing the mind. From there, you can do a lot of things next. You can use it as an object of meditation, of insight meditation, to see clearly as you focus on what you're doing. Focus on your mind at that time. What's going on when you're focusing this disc? Looking at your mind, how it works, looking at your attachments, and so on. Or you can use it to gain magical powers. You can then apply this incredibly strong state of mind to see through walls. People use colors because it's visual. You can use that as a stepping stone to exert your mind in the intention to be able to see through a wall. Or I know a monk who had a power of X-ray based on the color white. He was able to see inside people's bodies and was able to tell them what sickness they had, what was going on with their organs. And he said it was based on the color white, the development of absorption into the color white. This is as opposed to what I would call meditation in the Western sense of actually examining and scrutinizing and trying to understand things. It's more just a means of calming the mind. Now, both types of meditation are recognized in Buddhism. And tranquility meditation, as I said, can be a stepping stone for the development of insight meditation. There's no doubt about that. Okay, you're welcome. One thing I was kind of hoping is if anybody had any problems in their life, if there's something that's bugging you and that's why you're here, maybe you're depressed or something, how can meditation help me with this, or how do I deal with that? That'd be neat. Chakra self-healing meditation to balance and realign. To me, balancing means letting go. When you let go, you come back to nature. You come back to what's there. If you're trying to balance something, if you're trying to create a state of greater health, then you're already out of whack with nature, I would say. I mean, there are different ideas about this, and some people talk about immortality and so on. And I don't know a lot about chakra meditation, but my feeling would be that you've got to let go. And the most important thing is not to heal the body or to be in a state of perfect health, but to let go, to be able to accept things. Which state are you talking about? The absorbed states, or I suppose you're talking about the absorbed states? Or a state of balance? No, we're talking about a state of clarity. Well, we're talking about clarity in regards to our daily lives. I wouldn't expect that. It's not exactly totally focused. It is a state of focus, but it's something that comes naturally because you don't cling to things. Your mind is naturally focused. It's not like you're focusing or you're forcing your mind into some specific state. It's a state of letting be or letting a state of harmony with things as they are. I wouldn't expect that if you're not doing formal meditation that it would be very easy to attain this state. If you mean, can I do this without practicing any meditation? I'd say, power to you, but it's quite difficult because we're more likely to follow after and judge and to chase after things. But the outcome, the desired outcome, is to be able to have clarity of mind even when we're sitting here together, when you're talking to someone. Even when I'm talking to you, the goal for me is to be aware of what's going on. My lips are moving, there's a sound being produced, there's thoughts in my mind. to see them for what they are and to not become agitated. Maybe I say something wrong and it makes me feel bad and stupid and so on. And to look at those things, to examine them. You should be willing and able to examine everything in every part of your life. That's really what meditation means to me. But for a beginner, the most important thing is some sort of formal meditation, like training wheels for someone learning to ride a bike. Anger, the best for a beginner especially is to run away. When you're angry at someone, go to your room. Find a way to end the situation as quickly as possible. Don't try to find a resolve. Because you have to admit this is the same reason why we do formal meditation. You admit your weakness is and your limited ability. And so we need to somehow control our circumstances in the beginning. We can't just go out and be mindful. So when you're angry at someone, find time to be alone. You know, maybe after the situation's over and you've done and said a lot of stupid things, you know, and you're in your room and you're feeling guilty about it, start meditating then. Don't let it overpower your life. Don't let it destroy your life where you had a bad encounter with someone and then you're miserable about it the rest of the day. The best way to start is after the fact, so that you're not beating yourself up over things. Once you get better at it, when anger arises, you know, just look at the anger. Stop looking at the person. Stop thinking about them. Don't focus on them. They don't even exist, really. What exists is the sound of your ear, the light in your eyes, and the thoughts in your mind. So when you're angry at someone, you just look at it. As I said, my way of dealing with it would be just saying to myself, angry, angry, and just teach myself the nature of this anger and show myself, you know, look, this isn't really the best way to behave. You'll see that clearly. You'll see this anger is, there's no reason to be anger. There's no benefit from it. You're really being angry at nothing. You're angry generally at sound arising at your ear, which is stupid. Sound is just sound, or light touching your eyes. Or maybe someone's fist hitting the side of your face. At any rate, it's just phenomena. It's things that arise and cease. Focus on the emotions. That's a really good place to start, I think, to incorporate into your daily life. If you can't be mindful of everything, like you're walking around, walking. If you can't do that, or brushing your teeth, brushing. The best way to start is with your emotions, because that's when you think to yourself, what am I going to do? So just remind yourself, you're going to be mindful when you're angry, or worried, or so on. When you can do it, it's a miracle. It's amazing what it does to you in just a moment. It can change your whole life for that moment, change your whole path. Looks like we have some new people here. Is there anyone with any questions on Buddhism? Anything you'd like to know? I don't have to be the only one to talk. Other people can offer their opinions, their thoughts. Otherwise, we'll just sit here and meditate. I think personally that people expect meditation to be something special. Because in general, this is how we approach life. We're looking for something new, something super mundane, something beyond ourselves. We're trying, as a matter of course, to escape ourselves, to escape who we are. You know, that's why a lot of people come here to Second Life. We've always said they come here because, you know, and you read people's profiles and they say, yeah, real life kind of sucks, don't want to talk about it, which is really a pity because that's your real life. You know, that's the real part. If you come here to enhance your real life and to gain knowledge and to meet people, I think this is great. I mean, where would you find this many Buddhists from this many countries in one place? There's no question that this is a beneficial thing, but mostly we're trying to escape. And spirituality becomes an escape as well. It's a form of escapism. So the idea of a trance is much more appealing to people. They're looking for something special. When they sit down and they see bright lights, they chase after them. When they hear sounds or so on, when some special feeling comes up, they chase after it. So people want it to be something special. What I do is so much more like therapy. And I think the problem with that is most people think they don't need therapy, right? Most people think they're normal, or they want to pretend they are. And I think that's a real problem. There's a lot of people in the world who are good people, but don't see the need to train themselves, don't see the need to cleanse their minds, because their minds seem pretty clean. And that's kind of a shame. There's not much you can do about it. You can lead a horse to water, but they have to want to drink. But I would say the truth is quite different, that we don't need things like trance. We do need things like therapy. We need to train ourselves. We can't, the status quo or the average state of humanity is not one that's sustainable. That's what's creating this scarcity of resources and environmental pollution and wars and so on. We have to change the status quo in order to find peace and happiness, in order to bring peace and happiness to the world. Yeah, the problem is that most people aren't interested in something like that. I mean, it's you could say it's probably similar to how people aren't really interested in cleaning their homes. Yes, meditation is to help us become awake and aware, not to enter trance-like states. But I think the problem is, as I said, that it feels a lot like cleaning your home. That's really how you should feel when you're meditating. You shouldn't feel like something's coming, when's something going to come, when's something going to happen. So many people come to me and say, you know, I tried meditating, but it seemed like nothing was happening, which shows that they're approaching it from the wrong point of view. When you clean your house, what happens? You know, you don't get fireworks, you get a clean house, right? And it really is that way in meditation. I mean, it's obviously, goes without saying, that it's a wonderful and profound experience, and it's so awakening and enlivening. The problem is people aren't looking for that. As you say, many people are looking for this trance, for something special. So they don't get it. And that can be a real hindrance in the beginning. People want something more than what is being offered, because they don't see it. They don't see that they have problems. They think that they're very confident and proud and sure of themselves. There's a lot of that. You know, there are a lot of people who are sincere about meditation, but there are also a great number of people who are very sure of themselves and think they're already there. So they're just looking for some kind of ornament. Meditation is kind of something as an ornament or a feather in their cap or something. Yeah, I think that's the point, is even with our houses, I mean, how many of us are comfortable being in our houses. I'm sure there're probably people that are, but so many of us, right? You talk to normal people and, oh, their house is like, oh, you got to go back home and to the mess, to the chores, to the children, to the parents, to the, you know, to the mundane, right? Spiritual people love to be in their homes. They love to be locked up in their solitude, because then there's peace and they're able to find harmony. They don't have to put up with the chaos and the endless search out there in the world. So even just in a mundane sense of you're feeling good in your actual house, it's something that really comes from meditation, the ability to live with the mundane. But our mind is very much like our house. In the end, what they say is true, or the home is where the heart is. When your mind is pure, it doesn't matter where you are, or what you have or don't have. It doesn't matter what people are around you. It doesn't matter who you're faced with, what you're faced with. People who come, people who go. You don't think of yourself as losing people or gaining friends or so on. You see that life is what it is. It's a flux and a constantly changing experience. Attachment. Hey, that's not yours. You can't take it for yourself. That's everybody's, man. Attachment is attachment is like the knot. I love this analogy of the knot, because that's also what it really feels like, and that's how it occurs. It's the untying of knots. Attachment is something that we see as being insurmountable, just like a huge problem. Just in the way we might see a very complicated and tangled up knot. We might get frustrated and just throw the string out. But the truth is, if you just untie the knot, you see there was no problem in the first place. There was nothing there that was causing a problem. It was just in a knot. Attachment is a ghost. It's not real. It's an illusion of sorts. It's a tangled up state of mind. And all you have to do is pull in the right way and it unties itself. Of course, we create our own attachments. With the proviso that our brains have a big part in it. If you build up attachment over a series of over a period of time, your brain's going to get involved and it's going to create a cycle, right? And it's going to give rise to certain chemicals, and those are going to be attractive and can be very difficult to overcome. The point is being able to separate the two, the mind and the body, and to see that the attachment is not those chemicals. It's not what's going on in the brain. The attachment is how you react to them. It's the importance and the significance you give to them. Because addiction, like nicotine, for instance, they say how addictive it is, but nicotine only affects the brain, and the brain gives rise to this state that's very similar to craving. It seems like that's the craving itself, but it's actually just a brain state. It's getting ready for us. It's saying, okay, let's go. It's revving up the engine and waiting for us to get in. Now, if we don't get in, it doesn't go anywhere. The engine revs and revs and revs and revs until it runs out of gas. So this is an incredibly profound realization that comes in meditation, that you don't have to get in the car. You can just stand outside and watch. In the case of the brain, there's going to be a pleasant feeling, or a calming feeling that comes with the addiction. When you want things, you're never unhappy. you're either excited and happy about it, or you're feeling calmed by it. When the wanting arises, there is a pleasant feeling, right? Just thinking about something pleasant makes you happy, gives rise to this chemical euphoria in the brain. The way to stand outside watching is just to watch the happiness, to not give rise to any kind of significance, saying this is it, gotta go. This means I should, because there's thoughts arise that, you know, the object of your desire, cigarettes, then there's the pleasant feeling. That you can focus either on the thought of the cigarette or the pleasant feeling that comes, or the calming feeling, or whatever it might be. I would recommend more focusing on the feeling, but you can do either. If you focus on the cigarette, thinking, or you see a cigarette, seeing, you'll find that you're able to break the cycle. But you might also find that the happiness, the pleasure is still there, which then gives rise to more wanting. You like it and you want to create more of it from taking a cigarette. But when you focus on the happy feeling or the pleasure that arises, it's like this incredible release where you're able to gain the benefits of smoking without the disadvantages of clinging. You know, when you say to yourself, happy, happy. When you say to yourself, happy, happy, or feeling, or calm. You can stick with it. You feel happy. You feel fine. There's no problem. But there is also no clinging. You don't like the happy feeling. That liking doesn't arise. And because the liking doesn't arise, the wanting doesn't arise. And the wanting doesn't arise, the attachment doesn't arise. And so you don't go for the cigarette. You're just sitting there happy. When the happiness goes, you're not sad. You're not upset. You're not like, oh, it's gone now. You just know it for what it is. Because then you're onto something else. You feel pain, or whatever. NDE, what do I actually think happens? Well, my own suspicion is that the mind is, NDE means near death experience. It's a code word in our line of work. Like OOBE, out of body experience. Is that my feeling is that the mind is constrained by the brain. We have contorted our mind, twisted it up and tied it in knots to fit it into this itty-bitty living space of the brain. We've created the brain. It's our manifestation of reality based on the state of our mind, which is pretty perverse, relatively speaking. I mean, we're not perverse by a human standards, but from a universalistic standard, in terms of taking into account gods and angels and so on, we're pretty coarse. That's why I would say, that's my understanding of why people who have near-death experiences are so spiritual afterwards and aren't afraid of death, say they changed it, their life and everything, because it opens them up. It helps them see what should be obvious to all of us, that the mind is much more than this constrained state. I've heard people say that they know where they're going, they know where people go when they die, and they know that that's the ultimate state, that we all go to this state. Now, I'm much more skeptical than that, and I would say no, that's a silly way to look at it. That's like a fish talking about dry land. They say, whoa, there's this great place that I found, it's dry land, that's heaven, that's ultimate reality. Sure, it's less coarse than this reality. That doesn't make it perfect, and that doesn't make it final. I mean, we've come here for a reason, and we can always come back. We've created this over successive states. When you leave the body, you're going to a higher plane of existence. You're leaving the brain behind for a time. But because we still have these cravings inside, we're going to grab onto something and we're going to create this again. We're going to bring ourselves back here. You leave it because you for some time let go of the craving. The brain stops working, blood lost to the brain. And your experience changes. It opens up. It's freed again. But that doesn't last. That if your mind is pure, you won't come back. But as long as you have craving, you'll always create this again and again. You might even create more core states than this. So for someone who's experienced it, and then, you know, everyone says, wow, they know, they're so wise and they know where they're going, they could just be overconfident. No, just because you went to this wonderful place once doesn't mean if you die again you're going to go to the same wonderful place. No, it depends on your state of mind. And just because you go to this place doesn't mean it's permanent. It's not permanent. Just like this state of mind isn't permanent. We should be asking how we got here in the first place. How we got tangled up in this reality. For those people, you know, most of us sitting here, maybe some of you are thinking, oh, you know, what's he talking about? This human life is great, it's wonderful, it's profound. But if you talk to people who have gone to these places, they'll tell you that's quite, you know, that's absurd. Because they've experienced a place that is much more pure and much more peaceful. Many have depression. I hadn't heard that, but I can imagine it's because of the coarseness of this place and having to come back. Is that what you're thinking? Or it's not because they had that experience and didn't like it, is it? Because I don't think I've heard that. It's because they have to come back, right? And this place is coarse and yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's really a defense for a lot of the things I've said that people have taken issue with, you know, how our appreciation of the human state is a little bit misleading, I'm a little bit misled. There's nothing special about this state at all, and clinging to things just brings attachment. We should be able to open our minds up and be happy with what we have here and now, to pull ourselves away from even this human state. Not in terms of disliking it, not in terms of being against it, or, you know, that depression is a sign that they're still attached. And in this sense, attached to that wonderful state, which I think is a sense, is a part of the overconfidence I was talking about. Just because you go there doesn't mean you're going to be pure and happy all the time. You still have this attachment, which is going to bring suffering. Fear is a type of anger. It's based on something that you don't like, something that is unacceptable. Again, it's quite simple. It's just looking at the fear itself. There's not a lot I have to say, and sometimes when I say this, I feel like, you know, I'm not giving you an adequate answer. You know, I should have some profound answer for you, but the truth is, it doesn't exist. If you focus on the fear, you see that it's just another knot. Fear is probably the most profound, because it's, I would say, worry and fear are the most caught up in delusion. And as a result, they're pretty quick to change. You know, it's as soon as you gain the epiphany and the understanding, you won't go back to them. I would say anger and greed are a little bit more deep set, but worry and fear, once you get it and realize, duh, there's nothing to be afraid of, it doesn't disappear forever, but your outlook on it changes. When you're afraid, that's the truth of it. There's fear. It doesn't mean there's a problem. doesn't mean your life's falling apart. It doesn't mean you're not worthy. And when we go into situations and we don't know how to act, and you're at a party and you feel self-conscious, or you're up on stage and you feel afraid, well, that's all it is. There's a fear that arises. It doesn't mean anything. And if and when you can get better at this fear that arises of being accepted and so on, just focusing on the fear unties the knot. When you say to yourself, afraid, 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 what you see and what you're teaching yourself is that this is stupid. You know, this fear is stupid, really. That's what you're going to see. It might not come to you like that, this is stupid, but your mind's going to just get it. It's going to say, oh yeah, this is not the way to respond to this situation. This is not helping things. The problem is, what we normally do is freak out. Oh my God, I'm afraid. How terrible. I get up on stage and I'm like, oh, I'm afraid. Oh no, got to stop it. Oh no, 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 I'm going to give a terrible talk. Oh no. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. That's the wrong way to behave. When you accept it and say, now I'm afraid. Oh, now I'm afraid. You know, just saying afraid, afraid. That's all it is. You lose your fear instantly. You're welcome. I'd like to thank everyone for coming. If you'd like, if you have other things to do, you're welcome to be on your way. I'm happy to sit here. I think I have maybe an appointment with someone sometime later on. And I'm flying out tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm off to Asia. I'm going to Thailand first and then Sri Lanka. And there's even a chance that I might decide to settle down for a year or two in Sri Lanka, which means next time you see me here, I might be broadcasting from Sri Lanka. Otherwise, I'll be back in America in January. Thank you. Yeah. My airplanes are fun because I've got a non-stop 14-hour plane ride, 14 hours of solid meditation. No disturbances, nothing. Thank you, everyone. I wish I could bring you all with me. No, I don't. That's not true. I'm selfish. I'm going to find me a forest and shut the door for a while. Thank you, everyone. Yeah. Good night, Zeno. Thanks for coming. Good to see you again. Okay. I'm going to stop the recording here. You're welcome to ask other questions. And I'd like to give my wishes to all of you. If I don't see you again, then thank you all for tuning in. And I hope that it's been beneficial to people and that you're able to put these teachings and the other teachings you've gained here and you gain and continue to gain here at the Buddha Center into practice for your own development on the path and for the realization of true peace, happiness, and freedom from suffering. Yeah. Please have a good day and keep practicing.